If only I could find the answers to my three questions, then I would know always what to do. Right? Doesn't that sound great? Oh, Lord, if I could find the answers to my questions, then I would know what to do. Tell me what to do. Tell me the answers to all my questions. Should I do it now or wait? Should I insist on what I want or should I compromise for the sake of comedy? Should I surrender to what will be or should I try to shape what will come? If only I could find the answers to my questions, then I would know what to do. Over the last 10 and a half years of my ministry, I have heard this from folks so often, from you and from others. If only I could find the answers, I would know what to do. Should I quit my job? Should I go back to school? Should I get married? Should I get a divorce? Should I move? How should I raise my children? How should I take care of my ailing parent? How can I be connected to the holy? What can I do about this person who is driving me crazy? What should I do about my anxiety, my shame, my guilt? Or what should I do about my joy, my hope, my love? I've gotten all these questions and more. Life questions, theological questions, justice questions. If only I could find the answers to my questions, then I would know what to do. No one can give Nikolai the answers to his questions. No one can tell him what the right time is or who the right person is or what to do. He must, of course, discover these things for himself. Leo helps him on his journey, but Nikolai has to figure it out. The only answers he can discover are his own answers, the ones he arrives at by living, by doing, and by paying attention to what he discovers. So it goes with folks who come to me with their own questions. If it's a factual question, some piece of church history or some data question about justice, well, then we can look it up or I just know it, and sure, there's an answer. This almost never happens. I don't get easy questions. They don't come to me, especially now. People can just look it up themselves, right? No, the questions that I get that come to me in pastoral care are harder questions, questions to which I cannot provide the answer. What I do is help you frame the question. What is really at the heart of your struggle? I can tell you how some others have thought about this question to help you imagine possibilities. I can suggest spiritual exercises, which can often help you find the answers in your own heart. But mostly, what I do is encourage you to love and live the questions. To, as Rilke puts it, be patient with all that is unresolved in your heart. To treat the questions like locked doors, like books in a foreign language. To live them and love them, the questions, to let them work in you, that you might someday, without knowing it, arrive at the answer. I want you to know that I'm not just on the giving end of that advice. To live and love the questions, be with the questions, only you can discover the answer. I'm not just on the giving end of that advice. I've also received that advice. I've received it from not just one, but three different spiritual directors and advisors over the years who I often see for my own spiritual development. I've received it from my colleagues, other ministers and friends. I call them up, I see them at a meeting, I share with them my questions, professional questions. Should I start this new program or not? Does it work? What's the best way to raise the money we need? What should I preach about? What should I be learning and getting better at? Or personal questions. How and when do I move forward with my life? How should I raise my kids? How should I strike the balance between my own wishes and my desire for peace with others? Just to give you some examples. My questions aren't easy questions either. And my colleagues, my spiritual advisors, my friends, they say to me, Matthew, I can't tell you. I can tell you what I've discovered myself. and what others have told me about what they've discovered, but I can't answer these questions for you. Only you can answer them. And the answers won't come easy. You have to try out possibilities and live into them and see how it feels and how it works or it doesn't. And you need to embrace this uncertainty as a time of discovery and creativity, a time to explore what your ministry might be about and what your life might be about. You have to live the questions. More than this, you have to love the questions. See them as adventures, as opportunities to become and grow and redefine yourself. I've gotten that advice often. And sometimes I say in response, yeah, yes, that's right. I knew that, and thank you for reminding me, and that is so true, and I'm going to do that. And sometimes I say, or other words unsuitable for preaching. I don't want to love the questions. I want to know the answer, right? Sometimes our need to know what to do is so strong, we can't fathom the idea of loving the questions, of living with uncertainty, of not knowing yet. It's just too much. I've been there. I'm sure you have too. And you know what? Usually when I'm feeling that anxiety, I need to know right now, I grab onto an answer. Any answer will do, and I usually get it wrong. Maybe the answer is okay, but it misses more than it includes, or maybe it's just totally off base. When I short-circuit the process, I don't always see the full scope of the question. When we feel the need to answer a question right away, it often means there's another, more important, but more difficult question behind the first one. So when we're wondering, for example, should I quit my job? This is a question I get more often than you might expect. There are deeper questions. What do I want my life to be about? What are my gifts? What about this work is unacceptable, and why can't I change it? What are we longing for? And what is standing in the way of our dreams? If we answer the first question, yes, I should quit my job, I should retire, I should look for something else, but we don't answer the others. What is my life about? What do I long for? Well, we'll probably find ourselves stuck again, wondering if we should quit the next thing and the next and the next because we haven't lived and loved the essential question. What is my life for? Asking the bigger and deeper question is almost always more fruitful. Not just in our personal lives either. What can we do about third graders who can't read? Looked at for the deeper question can become, why do so many children grow up in the kind of poverty that stunts brain development? And what can we do about that, for example? Why are the finches on this island different from the finches on the other island? Looked at deeper becomes, how are we all creatures, related to each other? What should we spend the church's money on? Looked at deeper becomes, what is the mission of this faith in this time and place? Why is it so hard to lose weight? That question gets asked so often in January, doesn't it? Early January, the Y parking lot will be full for the next 6 weeks. Looked at deeper can become, what does it mean to be healthy? Or why is bad food cheap and good food expensive? Or connecting back to that personal again, why is our society so quick to shame instead of to love? Deeper questions, more fruitful. I could give thousands of examples like this. When asking the deeper question, or even just asking the four-year-old question, why? Why? Why that? Why that? How come? Can get you to deeper realities, more profound structural questions. This is often fruitful, helpful, but sometimes this is all too much. No parent wants to reply to the four-year-old question, why, with, because I said so. But sometimes you just can't take it anymore. Sometimes you're teetering right on the edge, and one more disorienting question is one too many. In one of the theories of change and leadership that I find useful, the concept that describes this is called the zone of productive disequilibrium. This is the chart. Don't look at the chart. Your eyes will begin to glaze. Don't look at the chart. I just want you to know that it's a real thing, and I didn't make it up. It's the zone of productive disequilibrium. If everyone is too comfortable, then there's no progress. No questioning assumptions, no adaption to changing realities. But if everyone is too uncomfortable, then they can't focus on the big questions. Everyone's too stressed, and their fight or flight response kicks in. In between is called the zone of productive disequilibrium. The knowledge that we need to think about this some more, there's a problem, we need to be creative and try new things, but we're not panicked about it. Too much panic and you shut down. You do nothing. You retreat. It's the zone of the deeper question, productive disequilibrium, the place where we can dare to question, dare to wonder, the place where doubts help us clarify what's true and what's important. The zone of productive disequilibrium is the natural home of Unitarian Universalism. We love questions around here. We like to talk about how we embrace the question more than any particular answer, that we are about the quest for meaning, not a doctrine of belief. We are pilgrims on a journey, hearth behind us, wayside hostel for those who knew wild roads. We cherish our doubts. We dare to question. We believe that to question truly is an answer. And what I want to say here at the beginning of our month on question is that you need to find your zone of productive disequilibrium. Get yourself in a place where you're just a little uncomfortable. If you're in a panic, let's get that down to a manageable level. Take on some tasks that will help you. Don't try to get to the deep level because you're not ready for it. Let yourself be held and loved by the mercy of the Spirit, of the world, of your friends. It's going to be okay. And you can get through this. But if you're feeling comfortable, then it's time to ask yourself some hard questions, some provocative questions. What do you want your life to be about? Is the world that you live in structured in the best possible way? And if not, what do you plan to do about it? What are you missing completely because you're not looking? What assumptions need to be examined with a scientist's mind? What uncertainty needs to be embraced with a poet's mysticism? Get in that productive zone. Rilke, whose phrase has inspired this thinking, was a romantic. And by that, I don't mean that he brought his lovers flowers, though he might have. He had many lovers. Maybe he brought them many flowers. He was a philosophical romantic. He believed in the present moment, in the working of the muse, of human possibility and sacredness. The romantic strain is strong in Unitarian Universalism, the sense that the mystery, the spirit we cannot name, flows in and through us. We love beauty and art and word and music, and especially in nature. We're inspired by these things. That's romanticism. The romantic impulse in our tradition is paired with the rationalist impulse, the commitment to be guided by reason and science, to break it down and figure it out. Sometimes these impulses are in apparent conflict. Some of us love spirituality while others find it mushy-mushy. Some of us love knowledge for its own sake while others find this cold. But go deeper. Go deeper, because it's only an apparent conflict. You'll see that both romanticism and rationalism are about loving the questions. Rationalism that skips to the answer too quickly is, as any researcher or scientist will tell you, unsound, not rigorous. Romanticism that is untethered from the world, that's a flight of fancy, is useless. They go together. asking the questions, looking into things, living with uncertainty, holding our answers with tender and gentle looseness, for there is more to discover. Celebrating curiosity, remembering that reason is our guide and not our God. Rejoicing in discovery, daring to question. The other reading today, Rilke's Ode to Orpheus, captures this romantic spirit, to be glad that the muse lasts but for a moment, and to not expect him to hang around forever. To remember that he is best when he is trespassing. He obeys best when he is trespassing. Isn't that a great line? Mm-hmm. Love it. Questioning is best when it is trespassing. Once you get into that zone of productive disequilibrium, I hope that you will trespass with your questions. Ask yourself questions that trespass on your assumptions and your complacency. Ask society questions that trespass on conformity and especially on oppressive systems. And love these questions. Maybe they will be solvents, cleaning away the grime. Maybe they will be a fresh breeze, bringing life. Maybe they'll be an awe-inspiring vista, making you stop and praise the gift of life. Love them. Go deeper and let the questions in their own time help you become your best and truest self. Celebrate that this is the faith of the questioning mind and heart. The romantic and the rationalist brought together into one. And sing praise for the questing soul. Live the questions. Love the questions. And in time, maybe you'll come to an answer. And maybe not. And that's okay. For to question truly, with bravery and hope and love, to question truly is an answer.